Hello, and welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. In today's episode, I get to catch up with Tanya Van Pelt. I met Tanya in yoga class many years ago, and we bonded around writing and the arts. Tanya decided to take her creative future into her own hands by becoming a producer, beginning with a web project she called the Happiness Series. I blogged a bit for the Happiness Series and have followed Tanya's work since. Now a writer, a producer, a content creator, Tanya has become an expert on diet-related wellness. She is the author of The Ageless Diet, Your Fountain of Youth, and the related agelessdietlife.com. She empowers people to chart a course through the health and wellness noise and reimagine a life full of nourishment, sustainable vitality, and fun. She is currently editing her second book, Sheet Cake Diet, an exploration into the links between depression and inflammation. She's also recently finished production on the first four episodes of her new web-based talk show, Practical Magic. It's a different kind of show about the process of discovering the mystery behind the magic of the etheric energetic realms. It features conversations with tarot masters, shamans, intuitive healers, psychics, and experts in the healing arts. I spoke to Tanya from her home in Denver. I hope you enjoy our chat. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I am so good. It's been a while since we've gotten to chat.
Yes, it has. Too long.
Yeah. And just in way of background, you and I used to practice yoga together back in Gene Kerner's class at B Yoga.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, I think you were primarily a writer and an actress, and now you've become this like major producer.
Yeah, I did. I was mostly trying to be an actress, but got tired of auditioning for really crappy projects by a lot of kind of dark, contrived dark indie projects by young men who wanted to be the next, Tarantino or Martin Scorsese or something. Uh-huh. And I decided to start writing my own projects, and then that morphed into writing a book and doing more production, because you just have more control, especially as a woman.
Yeah.
It's nice to have more control.
Yeah. And hopefully that's changing slowly, but
yes,
pioneers like you are what's required.
Yeah, I guess so. It's certainly more fun to be the person, the boss on set, than just, you know, an actress waiting to be told what to do, like right. A baby.
Yeah. So the other super cool thing, besides the fact that you're proactively changing the nature of the media landscape, is that all of the projects you're doing are so cool. You started with one of the words that's in my second half of the Peter's podcast title, which is about real happiness, real yoga, actual happiness, deep living. And you had your first show is called the Happiness Series.
Yeah, the first website. First of all, I love that deep living. That's really beautiful. You're so writerly. Well, you are a writer.
Yeah.
The phrase is so lovely. Yeah, the first project was Happiness Series, a website. I envisioned it as something bigger and grander than it actually ended up being. This lifestyle site, one-stop shop for astrology, tips on dating, and how to live a life that led to contentment.
Right.
And it's still there. The site, it still gets, you know, a lot of unique visitors. It's quite clunky. I haven't updated it in a long time because I moved on to other projects, but you can still go there for all that stuff. And it's been I would kind of call it a soft fail, because while it's marginally successful, it was a great learning curve. I kind of learned how to do some minimal coding and manage a site and manage a stable of writers and content creators. And we even produced a series of videos before it came out. And that's kind of with a crew of maybe 20 people.
Excuse me, my dog really likes that last part.
With a big crew of 20 people, more than I'd ever managed. I just learned so much, so I would recommend anyone, if you have an idea and implement it, do it.
Yeah.
And be okay with failing, because it'll end up leading to a lot of other things that will delight you.
Isn't that a lesson in succeeding, is that it always involves some kind of failure and a learning curve?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think Seth Godin is really good at talking about that stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But
what does he say?
Just that, you know, you have to consider that the failing is a part of the process, you know, and so you're going to encounter it, and just you have to take it in stride and you learn something from it. Mm-hmm. So, but the other thing I really liked that you said was that your happiness site was about finding contentment. And I think so many people are confused about what happiness is. They're thinking that it's is something that's I get what I want, you know, and then I'm happy. And having run this series, what are your takeaways?
One of my takeaways is that a lot of things to appeal to people online, or I guess it's just to get the clicks, you have to do stuff that's pretty banal and kind of boring, and but the things that people respond to are the more raw and honest things, which is interesting. To get the clicks, you've got to do things that are completely kind of superficial and not that interesting and bright and shiny. And then, but when people stay on the site, why they stay is because you're offering up something real and honest and depthful, also short, like 300 words.
Yeah. Wow.
The things that are most popular are the things where, like a video where, say my friend Tony Leroy he's an intuitive, is offering advice, but also experiences from his own life.
Hmm. So it's in that, like a personal, sharing a personal story or getting vulnerable oneself that's interesting.
Yeah, vulnerability. And back to your point about happiness, I mean, happiness almost feels like a very ephemeral thing. Like getting what you want. And then that high lasts, if you're lucky, 14 days, right?
Yeah. Alan Finger says 3 seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Then you
sometimes
want something
people
else.
Get a car. Yeah. And that's true. Then you want another pair of jeans or boots or something.
Right.
Or you get your life partner, you finally land the person you want to be with, and they're annoying.
I think that pretty much is standard fare. Like there's all the hormonal joy of that first falling in love part, and then you get to start mm-hmm. working on all your stuff together, and the nature of that is challenge. But
yeah,
there's also great beauty in it as mm-hmm. well as you grow.
Yeah, I mean, humans are kind of gross, right? And so learning that...
I like how matter-of-fact you are.
Thanks. I just don't have time anymore. It feels the stakes are too high to be to do anything surface anymore.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
I'm probably a bad cocktail party guest. I just want to go deep immediately. Uh-huh. I have no patience for the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, some of it is just like syncing up, sort of like the modems used to do when you would call on the phone line and they would scream at each other for a minute and then they would sync up and mm-hmm. then you could interact. I think some of that initial conversation is a little bit of that. And then you can go deep.
But. Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of weather, real estate. People try to avoid politics. I don't, but those, that kind of conversation. And then you'd be surprised what people tell Well, I'm always surprised what people tell me. If I just have one statement that's really frank, then it elicits something often quite beautiful and interesting, because it's so, I don't know about you, but these days I'm so easily bored. And if someone offers up something kind of chewy and chunky with texture, then I feel, okay, let's go. Yeah. Let's talk.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk. You have, you have two new projects since the Happiness series. One was the Ageless Diet.
Yes.
And now you have a brand new one too. So you can talk about them in any order you want.
Okay. Well, I still have the Ageless Diet. It was a book. It is a book and a site with recipes and workout videos and meditation and all of that. And I'm working on a follow-up book. It's on the eighth draft because I'm a slow writer. It's with my editor right now. And it's called Sheet Cake Diet. And it's about depression and inflammation. Because these days, I did a lot of research, but I didn't want to bog down the book with a lot of studies and dense research. Even though I'm one of those writers, the first draft, you know, you want to share everything because you did all the work. And you want to, so I turned it in more to kind of a memoir type story to make it more entertaining, hoping that my sharing my fuck ups will make other people feel less alone. And the premise of the book is that a lot of depression, garden variety depression, anxiety, panic attacks, are likely triggered by inflammation, whether it be from stressors. You know, in your life, your response to stressors, an allergen to something, say food, or a foreign invader, a bug of some sort, right? And then that inflammation travels and triggers issues in your gut, your second brain.
So that first inflammation is showing up where?
The first inflammation shows up at the site of where it happened. I mean, obviously, if you're inflamed because you have that standard American, you have that sheet cake diet, you know, high in sugar and processed foods, you know, the diet of convenience, the diet that's cheap and affordable for most people, sadly, then you have inflammation likely everywhere. I know I did. And it's aging you. And it's also because we never used to associate the brain with the body.
Right.
You know, a lot of doctors and scientists talk about the blood-brain barrier. But that's not really, doesn't really exist. What happens in your body directly affects your brain. And now all sorts of exciting new studies are coming out about the gut, which, as I said, is called your second brain. And a lot, your sleep, your mood, your immune system, they all reside in your gut, which is your microbiome. And that's the beneficial, you hope, beneficial bacteria. That are, there are more of that bacteria than there are of you.
Yeah.
And they control a lot of what's going on. So I delve into that in my book, and I try to explain using my story so people don't feel like I'm pointing a finger, you know, or saying it's anyone's fault that they're depressed, but and just show you can self-heal. You can heal. It's just an active, it requires your active participation.
Right.
Which can be really hard if you're depressed and you've lost hope and you're in this hole.
Right. And I guess talking from your own perspective is that vulnerability approach.
Yes, which is uncomfortable. I'm a private person. Don't necessarily enjoy talking about what happened in my childhood or the stupid stuff I did in my 20s or the way I behaved badly, which I've done very often, and how it affected my mental health. But that seems to be the thing that people latch onto, and it helps everyone feel less alone, I think, if we can share our stories. Certainly about depression, which still has this stigma, mental health, you know, what's wrong with you. Right. And I talk about garden variety depression in the book because there are certain depressions that are deeper and more profound, I think, and require, I don't want to tell someone, hey, you know, if you just eat better and exercise more, your depression will go away. If you have something really serious going on, you may need medical help. You may need actual pharmaceuticals to help you claw your way out of whatever hole you're in.
Right. And so not only that, it's sometimes it's nice is the wrong word, but sometimes you just need to be heard first that, you know, you're in pain. And if someone can say, I hear that, then you're willing to listen.
Yeah. I think so often people, first of all, might not admit that they're depressed when they do. We naturally want to be helpful people, right? Most of us. And, oh, well, have you tried, you know, getting out in nature? I have one client who said, you know, you write a lot about how walks really help you, but when I walk on the street, I feel really exposed and uncomfortable, and I feel like people might point at me and yell, like, look at this fat girl, and a walk's not going to make me feel better. And so sometimes the best thing you could do is just say, you know, I hear you. Maybe a walk's, you not offer a solution, but actually offer your story up. Say, oh, I get that. Sometimes I have a hard time, even though I know I'll feel better if I just do something productive. But some days I can't.
Right.
I don't know if that answered your, or
yeah, totally.
Was the response.
No, totally. It's, we do tend, I think, to feel like, despite the fact that most of the time we're thinking about what's going wrong in our own situations, as soon as someone else has an issue, we think we're like the solution, or we have the solutions for them. And usually the solution is simply to hold some space for them.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I never thought of it that way, but that's true. That's a great point. I had never thought of it that way.
Yeah,
that's really, really true.
Yeah. Lately in my own relationship, you know, I have been trying to just be silent, you know, like to allow something to be that would have made me uncomfortable and made me try to fix it. And instead to just allow it to be there, you know, like Wendy will say something and I will not respond instead of responding. So it's a challenge.
It is. It is. Some people are better at it than others. Mm-hmm. I would imagine you're better at it than most of us.
Well, at least it's in my awareness now. So
right.
I'm trying. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's step two in change, I think, in my new book.
Oh, cool.
It's like the pre-contemplation stage.
And then... So you're on part two. Is the new book called Part Two, or what's it going to be called?
It's going to be called Sheet Cake Diet, A Slanted Truth About Depression and Obsession. From that Emily Dickinson poem where she says, she writes, tell all the truth, but tell it slanted.
That's great.
I love that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what I'm doing. And if anyone reads it and then says, you know what, I want the studies, I can just email them loads of files.
Right,
they can decide on their own what to do. And then the other project, we just shot the first four episodes of this new kind of web-based talk show where I interview people who work in the etheric, healing, intuitive, you know, shaman type worlds.
And this is just amazing topic. So how did you come about that? How did you decide to do that?
I was meditating and I thought, you know, everything I do is for profit, of course, because I have to eat.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of this book and it's taken a long time to write. So I had to felt like I'm not an expert on mental health and I needed to do a lot of research, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not credentialed. And then writing I'm a super solo writer. It took a long time. And I was like, I want to do something that's just for free and for fun. I don't care about it making money. I don't care if anyone sees it. I just want to do it. And I'm really, really interested in people's work. I mean, I'd love to talk to you on my show about your work. As a writer, as a yoga teacher, as a podcaster, I love the nuts and bolts of work. Huh. And I love reading writers talk about how they work, you know, or actors, or a garbage collector. Just the process behind it is really interesting to me. So I want to do this show like Practical Magic, about the craft of the work in this kind of airy fairy realm. Huh. Because that's, I find that world really, really interesting. I mean, we're all intuitive. We right. just tap into it in different degrees. But
so are the people who you interviewed people who are sort of in your circle, people who you've interacted with in the past?
Yes. Some of them I've consulted with. Some of them I heard about from other people. It's amazing. I never think of Denver as this hub of like interesting thing, like in New York. I mean, I still feel like I live in New York because New York is awesome. But it turns out Colorado has a hotbed of these type healers.
Huh.
And
I would think Boulder would also.
Yeah, Boulder, Fort Collins. Uh-huh. Has the oldest center for occultism or something like that. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to interview these people about their work, what it's like to be in their mind, how they do their work versus say, come on my show and do a reading for a guest.
Right.
Kind of like, it ended up, obviously you talk about someone's work and then you want to know, especially when you have these interesting healers. Our first four guests, one was a tarot master who's been doing tarot for 45 years.
Wow.
And is recognized worldwide as an expert. Another is a shaman from Queens.
Huh.
and she's a psychic. And then another is an evidence-based medium who brings messages from, you know, loved ones who've died, or angels or guides. And then the other two guests were a duo who work together. One does acupuncture and the other does an energy clearing while the other one does the acupuncture. And
huh.
they both are highly intuitive, with a very codified universe. Lots of these two, they run the Academy of Energetic Medicine, and they just have these wild, deeply detailed rules about the universe, which I found interesting.
Meaning how they see it working.
Yes, and uh-huh. and dimension, and it was about dimensions and frequencies and things like that. And they're, for instance, I'm not sure I buy into all of that. Not that they're asking for my buy-in, but my listening doesn't require me believing everything. You know, I have my own belief system, as kooky as it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have these healers on, and I thought, and I have a studio audience of 20, 30 people. I was surprised on a snowy day how many people showed up last Sunday.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to talk about evil? Does evil exist? Wouldn't it be interesting to find out the state? I'm really freaked out about the state of our planet. I've read the UN report. It's scary.
Yeah.
And seems dire and apocalyptic. And our political situation in the world and in our country deeply depresses me
yeah. a lot
sometimes. And wouldn't it be interesting to talk about the state of the world? Are they getting any messages from the universe? And each one, there was like a through line, you know, or similarities, but each one had a slightly different answer. I mean, the duo that do that work together believe that evil does exist. That's not a particular entity like a devil, like the Pope says,
uh-huh.
but that it's there. Everyone else on the show felt that evil, that there was no evil, though people could behave badly.
Right.
I don't know. Do you believe in evil, Peter?
The way that we talk about evil, I think it exists. But I think that it's ultimately just a lack of the goodness. Like it's when the light is turned out or when you're afraid. Like there's the Course in Miracles talks about fear versus love, and when love isn't there, there's fear, but love can never not be there. So it's like this confusion state that brings about the evil. And
yeah.
I think that what's going on right now is a tremendous challenge to us not to put all of our all of our attention's the wrong word. All of our hope, or that it goes back to that happiness question. It's not going to be from the stuff that happens on the outside that's going to bring us what we're after. And right now we're watching people who are taking that to the nth degree. Like, they're trying to find their happiness outside and it's failing so miserably. And so we can either get depressed about that or get upset about that, or we can learn that. And probably the moment that the critical mass learns it, things will start turning around sort of energetically on its own. But it's going to involve a lot of work on everybody's part. You know, all the work that everybody's doing in the political realm, all the work that everybody's doing in the spiritual realm to set the stage. Because you have to be in this, like, to use yoga language, it's a sattvic position. You know, you have to be in a breath, you know, in that pause between the two breaths in order for you to see what's really going on. And as long as we're freaked out, we're either running toward or we're backing away. And it's hard to see from either of those positions.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm not sure living in the pause, that requires faith.
Yeah, well, it's like you take the pause so that you get the perspective, and then you go back into life with that benefit of that to help you see things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you act accordingly. You know, they're not saying don't worry and don't act and everything's going to take care of itself. We're going to have to do the action, but the action we're going to do is going to be, I think, more specific than some of us are thinking. Like, there's this great, like, hysteria about we all have to do something and everybody should be screaming, and so consequently everybody's on, like, orange alert all the time. And probably each individual is going to take smaller actions within her or his own realm, and that's what's going to make the difference.
Yeah, it's not kind of that, I use this word, but I really don't like it, self-care. It's overused. It's like wellness, right?
Right.
And it doesn't mean anything. What does it mean, getting a manicure, getting a massage?
I think traditionally it has meant that, but now we know that's not enough.
No, that's not enough. Reminds me of this lecture I went to about being a white ally. To people, to communities that are marginalized, people of color, and the idea is the allyship is, well, being an ally, that's an active verb, like healing.
Yeah.
And I feel that self-care is probably more what you're talking about, learning to take action without giving into hysteria, anger, and despair. You know, learning to say, get out the vote. or hold space for communities that have traditionally been marginalized, or listening, that's probably going to lead to that shift that you're talking about. I hope it doesn't take too long, though.
Yeah, no, I mean the situation is dire, and
it is,
and I think that we're going to have to pay for that as a world. You know, we're going to have to pay for some of the short-sightedness that people have put forth, and hopefully that will be a learning experience too, you know. And what I'm hoping that will get learned is that some of the resources of those who have done so well by ignoring everything are going to have to step up and help those who have no resources, you know. So that it's different from when Hurricane Katrina struck. You know, then there's going to have to be more of a sharing of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those of us who have had kind of an easeful time of it are going to have to do more heavy lifting.
Yeah, and I think that comes to happiness again, that we're going to learn that happiness isn't that if I get my stuff, now I'm happy and I don't have to worry that the rest of the world is in this other condition, and we'll start to see that helping others, doing things within our world, within our community, whatever the size is. The size can be very small, but doing within that, helping that, is what brings real contentment.
That's true. When I'm freaking out and I galvanize myself to go be with a community of really cool progressive people who just want to do their part. So when I'm action oriented, I'm okay. Uh-huh. Like, well, you know, right now it's a scary place, but guess what? We're doing this and we're doing it together, and right. It's hopeful. And it's kind of, for me, like going on a hike in nature. When I'm there, the first half hour or so is pretty boring. I'm in my head. And then at a certain point, you just kind of forget and you're in it.
Yeah.
And that is happiness. I think happiness is the forgetfulness, forgetting that I exist.
Yeah.
As
yeah, the personality part. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's the tantra. It's like to be in this moment and be divine in this moment, to be connected to that consciousness mm-hmm. aspect. Like, that's my job now, is to be conscious of what's in front of me. And
right.
all the story in my head about who I am and what I've done and what I hope to do, that's all like dragging you out of this moment.
Yeah, because this moment can be pretty fucking great.
Yeah, yeah, if you do what's right in front of you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is simple. I talk about this in my new book, that how change is so simple, yet never really easy.
Yeah, exactly. That's a beautiful distinction. And I think that's pretty much life, you know. It's
yeah.
But yeah, yeah, I noticed it in our neighborhood. We moved in April to Crown Heights in Brooklyn, and it's a traditionally poor neighborhood. There's a lot of people from diverse backgrounds of where they're from. There's a huge Caribbean population. And I've been really taken with how incredibly nice everyone is here. Like, you meet someone at the door, they're, you know, they greet you. You help mm-hmm. someone hold the door open. They're so grateful. And it's just, it's really refreshing. Even, like, I find New York a relatively friendly place. I think you don't live in a place that has 12 million people if you don't like people. But
that's true. That's a great point.
But usually yeah. you're ignoring everybody because it's too much mm-hmm. to sort of interact with that many people. But here I just find this sort of almost sweetness around... Yeah, I'm going to relate to you as a person because you're right here in the same building that I live in, or you're right here on the same street that I live on. And that's been really a nice thing about this new neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an example of how it can be so micro, the way that we live right, you know, the way that we live in the right relationship with our life.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's my cousin used to call those moments like a graceful gesture, you know, picking up the check at lunch unexpectedly, opening the door for, if you're a woman, a man, right, mm-hmm. or anyone, and holding it open. Just those, not moments of grace, because it's not that deep, but those. It's just a graceful gesture, and it's nice to be graceful.
Right,
it feels good.
It does. It feels good. And that's, I think, how you know that it's the right thing. That's how you know mm-hmm. You're in the right relationship with what's going on. That it feels good. You just did something, not because it helped you. It's unconditional.
Right. And and that's why I find when I volunteer, say to pick up people who are released, undocumented people or refugees who've been picked up by ICE and then are released, it's selfish. You feel good about uh-huh. yourself. So you get a high. It's kind of a kind of a lovely trick by the universe. Like, if you
right.
do good, you get as much benefit, if not more, than from than the person you're helping.
Yeah. And I think that's, you learned that lesson. And I think that's the lesson that people who don't know that, who are looking for the satisfaction from outside, from selfish things that are more materialistic, are going to need to learn.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how your shopping habits, but I've never been a big shopper. And then once I moved online, did most of my shopping, I noticed when I'm a little bored or restless, oh, let's look at these. You know, I could use a new pair of sneakers. Uh-huh. And I mean, I've got 10 pairs of sneakers, so why do I need a new one? And then you catch yourself and you think, wait, and then these sneakers are going to arrive.
Yeah.
And I'll have spent way more than I should have or really need to. And I'll wear them and then I'll put them in the closet and I'll go back to my usual sneakers, you know, my other like Adidas or Nike Air. And then I'll be restless again and I'll be looking again.
Yeah. I had an interesting experience with that exact thing, that I didn't get around to buying the thing, but I did all this research. I think it happened once with a car when we were living outside the city, and it happens sometimes with like some specialty musical thing or some podcasting microphone or something like that. And I'll do all this research and it's just such a source of excitement. And a couple times I've gotten right to the point where I was going to get something and then I didn't get it. And then like you went through that natural thing of not caring about it anymore without the actual purchase.
That's great. That could be a service, like a concierge service.
I'm not going to buy this for you now.
Yeah, but we're going to give you the whole process and it'll occupy you.
Right.
I mean, one of my theories, because it's true, I think it's true for me, but one of my theories is that everything that we do that's kind of stupid or bad for us is because we're bored.
Yeah.
And why are we bored? Maybe then boredom, it's like a diagram, right? The root cause might be boredom or fear, depending. And then boredom leads to fear, because why are you bored? Oh, because life is empty and we're all going to die, right? So
right.
It's a classic fear. And then,
or even just, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm supposed
right.
to do.
Yeah. And we're bored and okay, let's do some drugs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's buy an expensive car. Okay. Let's go into debt. Let's gamble. Okay. Let's have a destructive love affair. Okay. Let's eat this carton of ice cream. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And the only times when I'm not bored are when I'm really engaged with another person in nature or working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or working out.
Because you enjoy your work. I mean, you feel satisfied by your work.
I don't enjoy it while I'm doing it, but yeah, but it occupies me. What writer enjoys while they're writing?
I don't know. Elizabeth Gilbert has some stuff to say about that in Big Magic. But
that's right. Yeah.
I mean, she called it having a love affair with your creativity.
She's lucky. Yeah. I feel a lot of the times like, all right, I've got to write. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm such a loser. I can't. I'm not going to. I mean, I think one writer said most of writing is berating yourself, like procrastinating until it gets so painful you actually write. It's more painful than the procrastination.
Well, I think your strategy of grabbing another project in between is often fruitful. I mean, it's certainly been fruitful for me to like switch and do the thing I'm really excited about right now and then come back to the other thing.
Right. Yes. It's like productive procrastination.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever noticed that there are no ads on Peter's podcast? There's only a request from me that you support the podcast. It's so straightforward. Please check patreon.com/peterspodcast and support the podcast at any level you like. There's a fantastic level called Genius, if you'd like to be a genius, where we get to work together on finding just the right way to help you in a sadhana, a practice that helps you achieve what you want. And there's another that's to get you a mantra that will help work on anything that's troubling you in your life or some obstacle that you feel is in the way. That's patreon.com/peterspodcast. Here's the rest of our interview.
And what about you? When do you feel bored? And what do you do about that?
God. I don't know. I haven't been terribly bored lately. I've been pretty busy and on a lot of exciting things, but I think I waste a fair amount of time just pondering the transitions. Like I could definitely be doing something, but it's like, wait, I have to think or waste some time figuring out which one to do. So let me listen to a podcast on politics, and then that just makes me upset. And then I have to take the dog for a walk. And then, you know, I didn't really get around to that thing that I should have been doing. So, and it's like frittering away. That's what I do.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boredom is about frittering away.
Yeah.
One's time.
But I find that when I have the project that I'm really excited about, I try to make time for it. I really related to Gilbert's comment about that, have a love affair with your thing. Like when I'm writing fiction, I just fall in love with the characters and I just want to be with them some more. And so whenever I can grab a time to be there, I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm working on a project that's more like work, it's trickier.
Yeah. Or for me, if it's anything technical and I've got to learn a new skill, like editing, it's easy to space out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of work, especially creative work, is just doing it until the love part comes.
Mm-hmm.
Like a good marriage. A lot of it's, okay, I'm going to just trust that I'm going to fall in love with you again.
Yeah. No, that's totally good and totally excellent relationship advice, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not about you. It's that, you know, we're like working on the relationship and it's going to come around.
It eventually does, I think, unless you're married to someone toxic. But if you're married to someone toxic, you need to get out.
Yeah.
Or in a relationship, not married or doesn't have to be married.
Yeah, even in a working relationship.
Right. Just the trusting. Okay, if I just keep at this, I think when I was younger, I used to think, like, how did someone in their 30s, 40s, 50s, how did these people, they know so many like influential, famous, or successful people, and they themselves are considered part of that. I would have friends who are like that and who are older than me than I.
Mm-hmm.
They would be in these circles and they'd just be moving forward with their career. And it seemed like this impossible feat. Especially, I remember thinking this at like 22, how do people put together a career, a life? I mean, I'm lucky if this restaurant hires me, and I've applied to 10 and, you know, hopefully one of them will, that seems to be the best I can do and put together. And then I realize now that I'm in that zone where I'm older and it's just, you just keep doing it.
Right.
You just keep doing what you want, what you seek, and people, you collect people, you collect skills, and in the end, you reach a point, maybe it's middle age, maybe it's before that, where you do have this tribe of very accomplished people and this web of connections and a body of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's bad. A lot of it's a fail. But you get there, and I think it's the same if someone's seeking a romantic thing, it's, you just keep going,
right.
And eventually it does come. It's interesting. Life is so funny, huh?
Right. Yeah, I often will one thing that I've learned in working in this sort of scattered way that I've done is that it really makes sense as soon as you can think of it, as soon as you can figure out what it is that you want to be spending your time doing, start doing that in any way at all. Like just start doing that kind of thing, because that's when you will meet all that collection of people you were talking about when you're doing that thing. If you start going and doing something else because it seems like, well, this is more lucrative right now or something, and eventually I'll get around to my other thing, you're just going to develop all your contacts and everything in the wrong area.
Right, right.
And that's not going to help you. It's just going to be this constant pull in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, not that I'm offering advice, more looking back, but that it's not this linear path life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's not a steady climb. There can be really big leaps.
Mm-hmm.
Forward and back.
Yeah.
But it is this thing even on the surface, I'm sure some of your listeners are like me, where their family's like, God, Tanya, she had so much potential. I mean, they don't say, what a loser, but and then eventually this kind of ad hoc, this patchwork of a life comes together, and suddenly I'm the responsible one who succeeded.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have in us this drive, this desire, what it is that we're supposed to be doing. And it doesn't always look like anybody's picture of success or the right path or the right ladder, or, you know, and all of, even in the mainstream, those notions of a ladder or a way or falling down in the new economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no, what is it, corporate ladder, unless I guess your mom or daddy are rich.
Yeah.
And own the company.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then you become president.
Yeah, easy peasy. That's my career advice. Be born rich. Yeah. Don't be stupid. Don't not be born rich.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be one of these learnings that's going to happen for the whole society, is that you can't look at people who are not accomplishing and say, you know, it's their own bad choices, because it's not always that. It's, you know, it's this whole combination of the karma of the situation, where they are, who's above them economically, who's below them economically. You know, I think I've heard this statistic, I'm not sure how accurate it is, but that the people who are the most generous in terms of like small giving and charity and whatnot are poor people.
Yeah. I believe that. It's having phenomenal. Been poor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anytime you travel, you can see the communities that most take care of each other.
Yeah, and I think it's a compassion thing. Like you,
yeah, and
you
empathy.
Understand,
you know,
that they're like you.
Mm-hmm. And that they would use it. Yeah, it's really hard once you do studies on happiness. I mean, once you read, not do, once you read them and. Studies and articles on happiness and well-being and mental and physical health, it's really hard not to become hyper-progressive and believe in and know that things like a basic income provide it. You know, that a government that is for the people, of the people, by the people, should provide for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard not to see that as true. It's just some basic things that we could give each citizen in this wealthy country would give them enough so that they could have kind of abstract conversations like this.
Right, right. Yeah, there's that guy Maslow, right? The psychologist.
Right, Maslow's Hierarchy.
Yeah, about, you know, up to a certain point, you're only worrying about meeting your basic needs. And then after that, you can have all that, what you just said, we can have this kind of conversation, you know, but, mm-hmm. and it doesn't take that much to get to that level, you know,
right.
where your survival needs are met.
Yeah. And it wouldn't take away from us. It wouldn't, I think I hate this. And I think if I were a guest on my talk show and I were asked, does evil exist? I would say it exists in this idea that's put into practice of a zero sum game.
Yeah. Interesting.
That for me to win, you have to lose.
Right.
That to me is a societal evil that we've all practiced. I think that's my new book. I write a lot about jealousy, envy. I know the words are kind of different. I use them interchangeably, but I have suffered greatly from envy, especially when I was an actress.
Yeah.
And, you know, envious of people's connections, of their looks, of even now, you know, it takes me a moment to check myself when a friend has a successful venture. My first reaction is like a contraction that hurts my throat before I say, you know what, good for them. It's taken decades to get to that point, but feel that probably envy and the zero sum game likely go hand in hand, because it's this idea of, well, if you think he's beautiful, then I can't be beautiful.
Right. Right. That's an interesting way to look at that. I usually think of it, because the Yoga Sutras has this nice sutra about how to keep your composure is to, you know, be happy when someone has a success, when they've earned it.
Right.
So that's just sort of like advice. But
how do you do it?
Yeah.
What's the sutra? What do they say?
Well, they just say that if you can cultivate that. And that they say cultivate it. That's the solution. So you when you run into that situation and someone has achieved a success, and you have that pang, that contraction that you just described, instead, be happy for them. And the gift of that will be that you see that there is enough, that you're not lacking in anything in your own self, right? That each of us is complete unto ourselves, and that the solutions are always inward, and then bringing that inspiration back out.
Mm-hmm. That's
the
lovely.
The doing of it is a practice. You know, you have to.
Yeah, the doing of it is annoying, right?
Yeah,
it's hard. One of my friends said a long time ago, this intuitive. He said, "Whatever you're jealous of, you're actually pushing that away. What you covet, and you're envious of what they have or what they are, you push that away, what you desire. You're pushing it away. You're repelling it."
Interesting.
I mean, it's less evolved than the Yoga Sutra of cultivating, because it's more self-interested. Hmm. So now I also think about that when I have a twinge of envy. I think, oh no, I'm repelling the success I want. I better cool it.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're saying the same thing, just from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
So when are the new shows going to hit the web, or are they already there?
They're not there. We've shot the first four on Sunday, and we'll be editing them. And I guess as soon as they're edited, they'll be available on Happiness Series, on Ageless Diet Life, and on the YouTube channel. And then we'll see from there where we'll put them.
That's great. That's so exciting that you're pursuing all of these things you love.
Likewise. It's exciting. I love this podcast.
Thanks.
It's great.
Thank you.
It's such a natural for you. I can see.
Yeah.
I can hear.
Well, I mean, it's like you were saying about life not taking a linear course. It's this very much came from all the various things that I've done and came together in this moment in time when suddenly there's this new thing called podcasting.
Right.
So it's cool.
Yeah. That is really cool. Yeah, it's a good lesson in why you can't give in to despair if you feel your career's not going the way you want it to, because new technology is going to pop up and you wouldn't want to do what you thought you wanted to do a long time ago.
Yeah, you just have to stay open to what's in front of you and keep plugging away at things that you care about and figure out how to pay the bills at the same time.
Yeah, yep, because we all have to eat.
Yeah. So I will put links to all your sites in the show notes.
Oh, thank you.
Is there anything else you want to share about what's coming up?
No, I think I've promoted myself enough.
Well, I don't think so, but I'm delighted to have had this chance to chat, and I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, me too. This was lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet.
I look forward to listening to all the interviews.
Thanks. All right, Tanya. Take care. Namaste.
Namaste. You too. Bye.
Bye. Please stay in touch with me on patreon.com, where you can support the podcast, ask questions, or just drop me a line. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Instagram or on Twitter, where my name is Peter Furco. Thanks a lot.